sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. To date, there are 2,148 architects and engineers who have signed the petition on the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth website demanding a new investigation into 9/11 based on the scientific evidence that makes the official explanation of how the three World Trade Center towers came down impossible. Today, I'm going to talk more about what the architects and engineers are doing, and I'm going to share with you how 9/11 is connected to the Super Bowl. And then you'll hear an interview between Max Keiser and Paul Craig Roberts on the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So let's begin with the efforts of the 2,148 and continually growing number of architects and engineers. One of the goals this year of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is to continue to challenge NIST, or the National Institute of Standards and Technology, on their final report, which came out in 2008, on how World Trade Center Building 7 came down. Building 7 was the third tower to collapse on 9/11, and it was not hit by a plane. It was a 47-story skyscraper. The architects and engineers have a lawyer, Dr. William Pepper, who has represented the King family in the 1999 trial that had astonishing results, and he is now representing Sirhan Sirhan, accused of the murder of Robert F. Kennedy, and he is also involved in legal aspects of the murder of Mary Pinchot Meyer, who was having an affair with John F. Kennedy at the time of his murder. I would encourage you to check out the book Mary's Mosaic to learn more about that. Attorney Pepper wrote a letter to NIST on behalf of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and I'm going to read parts of that to you now. It's dated December 12, 2013, and it's to Mr. Todd J. Zinser, U.S. Department of Commerce, Office of the Inspector General in Washington. And he says, "Dear Mr. Zinser, this is the NIST report on the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, challenged by 2,100 architects and engineers. I write to you at the request and on behalf of the professional organization of more than 2,100 professionally degreed architects and engineers who come from a large number of states across the country. The members are not political activists in the usual sense, and their professional and personal commitments as citizens to this democratic republic and their patriotism have never been questioned. I write to you as their counsel because they have been troubled by what they have learned and professionally concluded about one aspect of the events at the World Trade Center on 9/11, the collapse of the third high-rise destroyed, Building 7. Please allow me to set out the issues in relatively lay terms. The underlying issues stem from the official NIST report, which basically contends that for the first time in history, the symmetrical complete collapse of a large, fire-protected, 47-story steel-framed building was said to be fire-induced. Since the issuance of the NIST report, members of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, as well as other independent researchers, have vigorously disputed the conclusions of the NIST report. It was only some years after the issuance of the NIST report that drawings were released in response to a FOIA request revealing that critical structural features in Building 7 were inexplicably missing from consideration in the report. These critical features include stiffeners that provided critical girder support, as well as lateral support beams, which supported a beam which allegedly buckled. Only through the omission of any discussion about the stiffeners and the lateral support beams is NIST's probable collapse sequence possible. With the inclusion of these critical features, NIST's probable collapse sequence must be ruled out unambiguously. It is the unanimous opinion of the structural engineers who have carefully studied this matter that an independent engineering inquiry would swiftly reach the same conclusion. After the discovery of these omissions, the group of engineers who discovered them pressed for nearly 2 years to get an answer to the question as to why these critical features were omitted from the report's discussion and analysis. They were greeted with silence until October 25, 2013, when a NIST public relations official, not a professional engineer, finally acknowledged that the stiffeners had been omitted, but incredibly, from an engineering standpoint, said they were not necessary to consider. My clients are in disbelief and aghast that the report, in the first instance, would omit a discussion of these material features and then slough off the omission by stating that, in respect to the stiffeners, it was not necessary for them to be considered. It should also be noted that the NIST public relations official did not address the omissions of the lateral support beams. This group of architects and engineers unanimously believe that the NIST report's conclusion of collapse due to fire could not have been justified if the stiffeners and the lateral support beams were not omitted. Mr. Zinser, quite frankly, the credibility of NIST and the Department of Commerce requires that you open an investigation into the potential negligence and/or misconduct by the lead investigators of NIST's Building 7 investigation, and that NIST be directed to produce a corrected analysis and report on the collapse of Building 7, but this time by fully taking into account the presence of the stiffeners and the lateral support beams. Silence from your office or a rejection of this reasonable request may prompt my clients to seek legal recourse and to raise this issue with their colleagues in Europe, where a number of government officials and professionals have long been critical of the official U.S. government's position and explanation of the destruction of the World Trade Center on 9/11. The detailed information and evidence possessed by my clients, I enclose here with a detailed technical narrative, graphics, and a DVD prepared for your further review, would be examined closely by their European structural engineering colleagues at Cambridge University and elsewhere. I suggest that the resulting reports would devastate the current NIST conclusions, but that is not our intention. We wish to handle this issue here, where it primarily belongs, but the ball is now in your court. If you wish to explore these issues directly with my clients, I am certain that a representative group of structural engineers would be pleased to meet with you and any relevant NIST officials in order to discuss the options. Avoidance through stonewalling and prolonged silence will no longer suffice. This will not go away. Let us see if we can find a way together to cooperatively address this concern. This discrepancy has caught the attention of a group of serious, patriotic American professionals, and they believe that even the consolidated control over U.S. mainstream media on this issue is capable of being run over by interested media sources we know in the United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, France, Russia, and elsewhere. I therefore respectfully ask you to work with us on this matter and look forward to hearing from you. Yours sincerely, Dr. William Pepper. They received a response that was written on January 14, 2014, from the Office of Investigations in the Department of Commerce, which looked like a standard form letter, which stated, after careful consideration, we decided upon the following course of action, and then they checked, there's four choices, and they checked off a box that said, refer your allegations to management officials of the affected Department of Commerce component. Your allegation has been forwarded to the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And that's their response to the letter sent by William Pepper. So the architects and engineers keep plugging away to get at the truth. Two of their other goals this year, 2014, are to keep the pressure on the media by providing the scientific evidence to them and also to provide this information to more and more architects and engineers. They're looking for your help and have a membership drive that they just started this year on their website, which is ae911truth.org. And if you're new to the scientific evidence that challenges the official narrative of 9/11, their website is full of detailed information and videos. They also have a place where non-architects and engineers can sign the petition for a new investigation into 9/11. So I encourage you to check out their website, ae911truth.org, and help out. If not you, then who? And now here's the connection between 9/11 and the Super Bowl. And now I'm going to read you parts of an article that appeared on Press TV on January 21st, 2014. The title of the article is A 9/11 Truth Super Bowl? Normally, the Super Bowl, with its ritual militarized violence and crass, tasteless, often downright perverse advertisements, represents American culture at its worst. But this year's Super Bowl, scheduled for February 2nd, will have one redeeming feature. It will put the national spotlight on the rise of the 9/11 truth movement. The Seattle Seahawks, who will be playing the Denver Broncos for the championship, are coached by a 9/11 truther, Pete Carroll. This fact has already begun to astonish the middle-brow world of mainstream American football audiences. The sports blogosphere is already spilling over with outraged headlines. Last spring, Carroll grilled four-star general Peter Chiarelli, who had just retired as the U.S. Army Vice Chief of Staff, about whether 9/11 was an inside job. Carroll expressed skepticism about whether an airliner really hit the Pentagon and apparently also remarked on the obvious controlled demolition of World Trade Center Building 7 and the only slightly less obvious explosive demolitions of the Twin Towers. Every 9/11 conspiracy theory you can think of, Pete asked about, said Ricky Ellison, an ex-football player turned military advocate who was present at the meeting. Pete Carroll is not the only American football celebrity who has championed 9/11 truth. Another patriotic athlete, Mark Stepnowski, first spoke out for 9/11 truth in 2007. By coming out publicly for 9/11 truth, Pete Carroll has joined some of America's most popular celebrities. Musicians Willie Nelson, Harry Belafonte, Mos Def, Eminem, Jadakiss, Immortal Technique, Henry Rollins, and Richie Havens. Actors Peter Coyote, Ed Asner, Charlie Sheen, Martin Sheen, Roseanne Barr, Sharon Stone, and Michael Moore, and two of America's most critically acclaimed filmmakers, David Lynch and Richard Linklater, all of whom are among the thousands of notables and experts listed at patriotsquestion911.com. Pete Carroll's reputation as a fearless 9/11 truth seeker will be the talk of many an American dinner table as the Super Bowl approaches. As the blogosphere drives the topic into public consciousness, the mainstream media will be forced to cover the issue. Now let's talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Here's what one article says about it. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, job loss, lower wages, and higher drug prices. And these are the things that will be affected. It will offshore millions of American jobs. It will roll back Wall Street reforms, sneak in SOPA-like threats to internet freedom, ban Buy American policies needed to create green jobs, jack up the cost of medicines, expose the U.S. to unsafe food and products, empower corporations to attack our environment and health safeguards. Although it is called a free trade agreement, the TPP is not mainly about trade. Of TPP's 29 draft chapters, only five deal with traditional trade issues. One chapter would provide incentives to offshore jobs to low-wage countries. Many would impose limits on government policies that we rely on in our daily lives for safe food, a clean environment, and more. Our domestic, federal, state, and local policies would be required to comply with the TPP rules. The TTP would even elevate individual foreign firms to equal status with sovereign nations, empowering them to privately enforce new rights and privileges provided by the pact by dragging governments to foreign tribunals to demand taxpayer compensation over policies that they claim undermine their expected future profits. We only know about the TPP's threats thanks to leaks. The public is not allowed to see the draft TTP text. Even members of Congress, after being denied the text for years, are now only provided limited access. Meanwhile, more than 600 official corporate trade advisors have special access. The Trans-Pacific Partnership has been under negotiation for 5 years, and the Obama administration wants to sign the deal by early 2014. Opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership is growing at home and in many other countries involved. And now here's an interview between Max Keiser of On the Edge, which is on Press TV, and Paul Craig Roberts. They're discussing the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Hi, I'm Max Keiser, and you are on the edge. Time now to turn to Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. Dr. Roberts is an economist, author, and now a blogger at paulcraigroberts.com. He was assistant secretary in the Reagan administration. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, welcome back to On the Edge.
Thank you, Max. Glad to be with you.
Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, it's a secret trade deal. Talk about it. Who benefits? Why should we care?
Well, it's a 1% of power tool, Max. And who benefits is not completely clear, but certainly it removes corporations from accountability to government. And therefore, it gives them independence of being governed. But who really does benefit? And that depends in part on what the definition of a foreign firm is. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that American corporations would want foreign firms to have more rights inside the United States than they themselves would have, unless a foreign firm includes an offshoring firm, in which case the American firms would have the same position inside the United States as the foreign firms, because if offshoring firms are included in foreign firms, then this at least would take away the question why American corporations would want to support a bill. You know, there are 600 of them advising this secret process. Why would they support a bill that gives them a disadvantage in their own country? So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what the definition of foreign firm is in the bill. Some other points that we could make about this before we assess it. If you look at the agreement, it's Australia, Brunei, New Zealand, Singapore, Vietnam, Chile, and Peru. But the importance of, say, Brunei or Chile or Peru operating in U.S. markets is probably not very great, but it could be a way of buying the corporation and setting up the corral around China. Vietnam, of course, makes a great deal of sense of that because it's got a large population and it would be a great place for the Americans to have bases against China. So that is a possibility that it's a base search.
Right. Let me jump in here for a second, because first of all, let's be clear. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is a trade deal that's been negotiated in secret, and it gives corporations, once again, unilateral rights above and beyond any kind of rights that one might hope were enshrined in the Constitution. And Dr. Roberts, this is, of course, coming on the heels of some other very favorable legislation for corporations, the Citizens United law that was passed that gave corporations unfettered access to campaigns with money. Also, we just have Obamacare, which is passed in the United States, which again gives corporations the right to directly tax citizens in America. They don't even have to go through the government anymore. The pharmaceutical industry can just tax people directly and take their money directly. Again, a huge giveaway of rights and powers to corporations, Dr. Roberts. Is there any end to this? And if there is, what is the end play of this? Because it looks rather disturbing.
Well, you know, they call it a trade agreement, but it doesn't really have a whole lot to do with trade. It has to do with what you just said. It's putting corporations outside the law or giving them the power to decide about those laws that affect them. And part of this is the free market ideology, Max. And the free market ideology that got going with the notion that markets are self-regulating, so we can deregulate the financial industry. In a way, this is another step, because in the free market ideology, making a business adhere to a regulation is a taking. You're taking away the property or the profits of the business. You're imposing a cost. It has to comply with the regulation. And what this TPP does is it gives this corporate board the right to force the governments to pay for the cost of regulations that they impose on the company. So if a company comes in and says, well, this regulation is costing me X million a year, then the government has to refund that. So it is a way of continuing this sort of ideology that corporations essentially should not be subject to regulation, and that any regulation is a taking. Now, there's a tendency to say, look, they're letting the corporations take over the world. Well, think about this a minute, because the official ideology in the United States is that we're the only superpower, and the goal is world hegemony. Think about the neoconservatives. They're very powerful. The neoconservative project for a new American century essentially calls for the American empire, not for a corporate empire. So I don't think the neoconservatives would want to turn government over to corporations.
How does the president of the United States get away with deferring to U.S. corporations in this way? It's bad enough that he defers to the U.N. when trying to work out his foreign policy, but how does he get away with deferring to foreign corporations? I mean, that seems radically anti-constitutional.
Well, everything that's been done for the last 10, 12 years has been radically unconstitutional. I don't know that the Constitution is any longer a check, but the question remains. It's a good question that you ask. Who benefits? That's not a clear answer to that. Now, as I said earlier, if foreign corporations include the American firms that are offshore, and these are the powerful firms, then they are not disadvantaged by having Brunei and New Zealand and Singapore and Chile and Peru have special rights in the United States because all of their offshore enterprises also have special rights in the United States. I do think, Max, another part of the story could simply be this is just a continuation of this mindless free market ideology that corporations should not be interfered with, and interfering with them costs the money, and so the government has to pay for it if it interferes with them. All kinds of other groups may be tagging on to this for their own reasons and agendas. And I do think that it's entirely possible it's also part of corralling China, getting China surrounded with bases. You know, we have now declared that the new policy is to move the focus of the U.S. military to the Pacific, and we're reactivating former bases, we're building new ones. So this may have something to do with that. And I certainly will admit that on its surface, it can also look like another step toward some kind of global governance.
Okay, well, certainly there seems to be a trend toward a global governance, global banking, and this is another plank in that kind of initiative going forward. And of course, when you use the term free markets, it's a bit of a misnomer because we're not talking about free markets. Because free markets implies competition. But these types of trade agreements snuff competition. They push competition to the side and they bring in this oligopoly, this kleptocracy. But I wanted to talk a little bit about something you've written on your blog, paulcraigroberts.com, entitled Silent Spring for U.S. Now, Silent Spring, of course, brings up Rachel Carson's 1962 book, where it was a polemic against industrialization and for the environment. Have you become a squishy, soft environmentalist, Dr. Roberts?
The point of the article is that the external cost of production, which are not included in the cost, are things like the destruction of water resources, the destruction of the soil itself, the pollution of air. There are all kinds of economic activities that have these very serious external costs that are not included in the cost of production. The fracking destroys all kinds of water resources. And since these costs are not included in the cost of production, you have no way of knowing whether the output is worth as much as the cost, since such a huge part of the cost aren't counted. And this is a great failure of economics. And that's because when economics started moving along as a discipline, the world wasn't very densely populated. The technologies were nothing like as toxic as they are now. And so it was convenient to simply ignore these costs and to treat the use of natural resources either as waste pools for pollution or to exploit the mineral and other resources. This guarantees the way they measure GDP, a rise in GDP, because they're costless. And so I'm just trying to call attention to that and to point out something that's also consistent with your point of view, that the corporations are getting more and more power. And we have now had scientists say that it's impossible to go up against Monsanto on things like genetically modified seeds, because they control the research. They control the departments where the research would be done. The EPA has no independent sources other than the industry studies. And so it is all just part of the sort of the corporation saying, we want less and less accountability, less and less. And I think that's clearly what the Trans-Pacific Partnership does. It essentially removes them from any regulation, because the governments are not going to have the money to pay up all of the costs that the corporations bear from regulation. And so they'll just have to dispense with the regulation. So this is, in effect, a development in the opposite direction of what we need. We need to start thinking about what these external costs are, how expensive they are. You know, when you have huge dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico from the runoff, from chemical farming, those dead zones are not included in the cost of the farming or the price of the farm products. And as long as you can send off your costs to third parties or to the environment, then you can have more profits. And lots of activities become profitable that otherwise would not be if the full costs were considered. And so this, I think, is getting worse with this Trans-Pacific Partnership, because it essentially removes corporations from accountability to government. In that sense, it's a step away from global government, because it's saying these people are removed from being governed. We don't govern them anymore.
Okay, so to follow up on the Silent Spring for U.S. a bit, you're not referring to, let's say, what Rachel Carson would talk about in terms of environmentalism for environmentalism's sake. You're pointing out that what the economists call the externalities of these economic activities, the costs are so grave, so high, that it's causing problems that are completely unsolvable in terms of the ability for the economy to absorb these problems, and the underlying economic models themselves have ceased to make sense. To give you two examples, of course, in the area of fracking, it takes 5 or 6 units of energy to extract 1 unit of energy in fracking. So it's a net energy loser. Similarly, the U.S. economy, for every $7 of debt is required to develop $1 of GDP growth. So again, it's the arithmetic of losing.
And again, that was Max Keiser from On the Edge interviewing Paul Craig Roberts. In my opinion, these trade agreements are part of the whole effort to create one world government. Paul Craig Roberts cited the neocons and their document, The Project for a New American Century, in which they called for full spectrum dominance and an increase in military spending to achieve that. But they stated that the American citizens wouldn't go along with it unless they were confronted with a catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. The document was written the year before 9/11 occurred. They used 9/11 to shore up military power, to secure oil and gas reserves in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the rest of the Middle East, and to secure the drug trade. The other ways they try to gain their one world government is through the World Bank and the World Trade Organization, and also through these trade agreements, which override national laws. In a recent article written by Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flowers called Bipartisan New World Order, Fast-Tracking the Trans-Pacific Partnership. In it, they state that members of Congress have seen the research that shows 90% of Americans will see their income go down from the TPP, while the wealthiest will get wealthier. And they also say that after 4 years of secret negotiations with more than 600 corporate advisors, the once seemingly invincible largest trade bill in history, covering 40% of the world's economy, looks very much like it can be defeated. Well, I sure hope they're right about that. They also go on to say that scores of organizations have come together in a movement of movements to create a web page, stopfasttrack.org. And it says they've planned 10 key days of pressure on Congress from January 22nd to the 31st. During this period, people will be making phone calls to Congress through the website, which will provide simple tools to call Congress. In addition, during this period, people are organizing for the State of the Union on January 28th and an Intercontinental Day of Action on January 31st. Now, you may be listening to this after those dates have gone by, but they do have a website called popularresistance.org. So check that out, and you can also go to the website stopfasttrack.org. This sounds like something everyone needs to be involved in, so please do your part and check out those websites and do what you can. Also, according to Dave Johnson in an article on the website globalresearch.ca, even the just-signed Korea Free Trade Agreement is already hurting our economy. A recently released fact sheet from Public Citizen looks at the damage our economy is already experiencing from the Korea, Panama, and Colombia agreements. There's another free trade agreement that's in the works that I haven't heard much about. It's called the Transatlantic Free Trade Agreement, TAFTA, and it does much of the same as what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is doing and more. If you want to learn more about that, just Google TAFTA, T-A-F-T-A. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.